by Goldschmidt.
Because we finished in Shir, even though we finished it for right now, we'll continue at the very end. You'll understand what I mean by the time I get to the end of Shir, hopefully. I hope. And I hope we'll still have time left. I promise you, B'li Nedar, of course. We'll have time left in the end. I stopped early so we could have time left in the end, and I hope I'll be able to keep that promise. And be still tied into our sugya we just mentioned about the Kedusha of a Krach, etc., etc. I'll have to make it a little short shmuzin. This is Parsha's Achimos Kedoshim, double Parsha. Hopefully you guys are aware of that. I'm going to ask anyone here who's a little tired to give me their full strength, full effort right now for the shmuz. I'll tell you a quick story. About 2 months ago, I was in America for a recruiting trip. And I was in Keter Torah, actually, and representing where I got married. Father Luck was very much responsible in helping in that shul be built. I don't know if he could sell it, because is it a krach? Anyways, T-Neck may be a krach. Maybe T-Neck's a krach. Could be. People come from everywhere to see T-Neck.
Who does that?
We grow. We'll
go for change.
Okay, maybe not everyone.
Whatever.
Anyways, so it happened when I was there. I was going to Seattle that Monday. I was going to be that Tuesday. Boston Monday, Seattle Tuesday. I was going to be in Seattle that next Tuesday. And there was three boys who applied from Seattle. We never had a boy. We had one boy from Seattle who came many, many years ago. Now the next year there are four boys from Seattle coming. One has recently applied again. Now. Anyways. It's called Northwest Yeshiva High School. Anyways, very fine boys. But there was one boy who was applying who was not from that standard school of Northwest. He was from like a public school. And sounds interesting. So I couldn't contact the kid. I couldn't reach him. I tried. We played email tag. He wasn't able to make it when I was going to be in Seattle, and I was very limited how long I was going to be there for. And I wasn't sure what I was going to do regarding meeting him. And I spoke in the shul. I gave the drusha and the team minion. As it was over, he says, "You know, you're in. You mentioned you worked in Yeshiva Tor Traga." He says, "Actually, I'm applying there. I'm from Seattle." I'm like, "What's your name?" So he says to me his name. I'm like, "I've been emailing you back when we couldn't meet up. What are you doing here for Shabbos in Teaneck, New Jersey?" He said, "I'm here for a built Shabbaton."
For what?
Built. It's an NCSY program. Shabbaton. He was in town for a built Shabbaton, NCSY Shabbaton. So I said, "Listen," I said. He said, "And the time he gave me in Seattle is not going to work out." I said, "This is perfect. I'm sure it's coming to Yeshiva probably. It's like min hashemayim." I said, "You know, let's sit down whenever you're finished with your next session, and let's interview you right now. We'll learn to get a little bit. I'll interview you." Sure. So we start to talk, and P.S. the guy's not shy at all for Yeshiva. He's not. Not because he's not a great kid. He's a great kid, but he's not. He's like more of an outdoorsman. He's not like the sit down learn type. And I said to my business, like, I was saying, "I don't think it's the right fit for you." I mentioned him some places like that. So I decide, you know what? I need someone else who's like, you know, who knows the guys besides me, who's more like taking the rabbinic perspective. Let me get one of the guys, Torah Traga Shabbaton in the shul. Let me grab one of the guys who I trust a lot, who's a little out of the box, a little different, a little unique, who can maybe give some advice where this kid should go. So I call over and I know him, Shai Weinstein, who's a great kid, you know, very unique guy. So I said, "Shai," I said, "there's a boy here." I told him his name. I said, "Can you help me out? Let's brainstorm a little bit, you know." And I said, "Describe yourself to Shia." So he's like, very, I'm inspired, but I'm not a big learner, and I need to be more outdoorsman. I like to go logging even. I don't know what logging even was at the time. He explained to me. I'll explain to you later. It's not for now. It's like extreme sports. That's extreme sports. Anyways. So I said, after like the 3-minute description that he gave about himself, Shia's like, "Shia's perfect for you." I'm like, he goes, "Yeah, our guys also get out a lot." And I'm like, "No, Shai," I'm like, "I'm not trying to sell the school right now." He's like, "Yeah, Shai." I'm like, "No, Shai, seriously, like, stop with the shrug, take your shrug hat off. I'm trying to work with this kid and advise him what's the best place for him." He's like, "Oh, seriously?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Oh, in that case, Shai is the wrong issue for this. Let me tell you what I think is right." Now, he thought I was calling him over because I needed him to, like, it was like a little cheap move of call. "Oh, yeah, perfect. We love logging into our shrug. We all do that in our spare time." Now, I don't even know what it was. I've never heard it before, even.
People call it Torah Laga.
That's like a joke I should be making, not right now, not you.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Josh
came on with Florida, though.
Anyways. My point at the time and right now is that if you go through life or you go somewhere and you're not sure what the ultimate goal is, then oftentimes you'll be barking up the wrong tree. You'll be pushing the guy on the wrong path. I was speaking with Yoel the other day. We were learning on the phone tonight. And, you know, the most important thing in life to figure out where or how you want to go and the direction you want to travel in your life is figure out where you actually want to end up in the end. So Shia Weinstein thought I was trying to sneak my way with this kid and push me to Tartraga. So he was like, yeah, sure, Rabbi, I'll be there for you. We love logging over there. And what he didn't know was I honestly was not trying to do that. I was really, my heart was in the right place. I was actually trying to direct him to a yeshiva that was more fit for him in the end. That was my goal. If you don't realize what your goal is, and you come a little bit out of left field, and you're trying to, you know, to do something, go to a certain place, and you don't know where you're supposed to be heading to, then it's very unlikely you'll ever receive or reach even close to a proper goal, because you don't know which way you're heading. The example we were doing, you know, I was doing the other day was, let's say you're in Yerushalayim, you want to go to Bnei Brak, and you think of this where you want to go, and you start making directions, but you're supposed to really go to Tzfat in the end, not Bnei Brak. By the time that you're done, and you end up at the house you thought you were supposed to go to, you made a lot of wrong turns. That's not where you're supposed to go to at all. So the most important thing before you even start anything else is to figure out exactly where you're supposed to be heading in. Where am I directing myself to? What is my goal? Before I figure out how to get there, is really what's my goal in the end. I'll give you just a sports muscle. Imagine a guy gets subbed in a basketball game and he pays attention because he knows for the future. This is important for us. We need this. You get subbed in the end of a game, let's say, and you break away from your man, and the guy passes the ball to you, and you drive straight for the layup, you hit an easy layup, and you're waiting for the crowd to cheer. But, you know, you were down by 3 with 4 seconds left, and it was the wrong shot to take. So, in theory, you hit an open shot, 2-pointer, you know, but the clock's going to run out, and the game's over right now. Or, you're up by 1, you want to hold the ball. Like a Ahmad Bradshaw a few years ago, if you remember the famous scene when he couldn't hold up on the 1-yard line. His job there was not to score touchdown Dafka. It's ironic, because they parted the sea for him, and he ran right through, and he's like, I'm supposed to be stopping, and his body wouldn't let him. He tumbled in, and he scored a touchdown in the end. It's very funny if you ever watch it. It's not funny for the Patriot fans. It's not so funny for him. Not a Patriot fan or no? So it's not funny for them. But it was funny if you watch the game. If you watch the game. If you knew exactly what the point of the game was, then that guy's action is the wrong move to make. You've now given a chance for him to tie up again. You're supposed to stall, run the clock out, not score a touchdown. It's like, counterintuitive, but because they know what they were doing, they ended up perhaps even hurting their team. And therefore, once again, as Joel and I discussed a few nights ago, the entire purpose of life, if you don't know where you're heading towards, then every decision that you're making about your life would be possibly done in great error. And therefore, it's crucial and extremely important to figure out what exactly we're doing with our lives. And therefore, this is Parsha, in the first part of it, is a discussion that comes up. It says, V'chai b'hem. Supposed to live by the Torah, live by the mitzvahs. And if you look over there, Rashi says, Medrash, what does v'chai b'hem mean? It means not v'chai b'hem in this world, because people do mitzvahs and they die. We live in this world for 120 years max. And that's not really even so practical nowadays. It refers to the world, shakul, you're going to live in the world, in Olam Haba, the world, kulu aruch, you're going to live in that world, because you do mitzvahs. You're going to be close to God in that world. The problem with that drasha is that David and Pizen, I can tell you, as we learned together a number of weeks ago, what else we learned from v'chai b'hem? What else we learned from that? Remember? V'chai b'hem. What do we learn from v'chai b'hem? Remember, we learned the Rambam says v'chai b'hem as opposed to v'yamut b'hem. You're supposed to live, which means someone gives me a mitzvah to violate or die. What do I do?
Depends.
Excellent. What do I do normally?
You live.
I should the Gemara tells us, and the Rambam quotes the halacha, in Hilchos Sotah Torah, he quotes the halacha, that if it comes to a situation when someone says to you, you know, I want you not putting tefillin on today, and if you do, I'll kill you. You do not put tefillin on today, assuming it's not a Shas Hashemad and other examples that we went through together, David. However, the drush is not about Olam Haba, it's about Olam Hazeh. Daf is supposed to live, not die. The mitzvah given there for you to follow and live with them, except for the big three. At a time when someone's doing it for the purpose of, you know, mocking Judaism, let's say, or the Holocaust, when it's a Shas Hashemad, when it's a time of persecution. So how can you, Rashi, tell me, the Medrash tell me, V'chai b'hem really means referring to doing mitzvahs so we get into a world of kulo aruch, a world when God is in charge of everything in Olam Haba, when there's mamash, a very practical explanation of the pasuk, which is not that at all, which is halachic. He shouldn't die, he should live. Based on that, it's a question that Rav Schwab asks. And Rav Schwab points out the following things. It's not a stira at all. It's really the same point. What's the point? When the Medrash says v'chayav b'hem, which means that you'll be doing mitzvahs and you'll be enjoying it in the world in Olam Haba, what does that mean? It means you're going to be doing mitzvahs and be able to cling to God through the mitzvahs in Shemayim. And he says the same thing in this world also. The purpose of v'chayav b'hem is to learn how to do mitzvahs and live your life in a way to cling to God. And if that means you violate sometimes when the halacha tells you to, so you violate it. But the bottom line of both examples is the same. And that is that the purpose of that next world and even this world is really the same purpose, which is to be close and cling to God. And solely that. As a matter of fact, many people ask the question, many of you should ask the question as well if you went through Shai Mikra or even went through the Parsha at all, in the very beginning of Sefer Bereishis, Unreached warned, if you eat from the tree, then B'yom, the day that you eat from the tree, it says you will die. Now we all know Unreached ate from the tree in the end, and he lived that day and the next 970 years. So what's the shot? Did everyone ask that question? God promised he'll die that he eats from the tree, and he ate from the tree and lives 970 years? What's the shot? So it says Rashab the same thing. What is death? Death means a distance from God. Doesn't mean you're not in the world anymore. It means that your life is not purposeful. It says in the Gemara, in many places, people with tzaddikim, when they're dead, they're still called alive. And Rashab, when they're alive, they're still called dead. Because life is not just to be functioning as a living organism. It's to be living in a world when you're alive, which means you're connected to God. And the opposite is when you're not connected to God. And if that's my purpose, not, I'll repeat what I said beforehand to some guys, your sole purpose in the world is to connect to God. If that's what your end game is, v'chai b'hem in olam haba, v'chai b'hem living in the world olam hazeh, every purpose is to connect to God. Then if that's where my destination is supposed to end up, then every decision that I make from this point until then should be with that in mind. The Chavetz Chaim, one time, Rav Schwab says a story over it. One time he asked a question to Rav Schwab. He said, when you go to the Torah and get Birchas of Torah, what do you think we make that bracha? Of Chai Olam Natav B'Sochein, what do you think? So Rav Schwab's like, didn't say a word. Chavetz Chaim says, where are you going to be in 500 years from now? He asked Rav Schwab. Rav Schwab says, with God. 5,000 years from now? With God. How about 5 million years from now? With God, obviously. With God. So he says, that's what the bracha means. The bracha means that chai olam, which means a world where you are with God. Olam, again, like olam haba, the world we mentioned before, the chai b'hem, the world that is the world. This world is 120 years. Like, you wouldn't call pregnancy a life. You would call this living is a life. That's 9 months. This hopefully is 120 years. This is 120 years. That's eternity. Well, this is not a life either compared to that. So the chai olam, the real, the ultimate life, the permanent life is really an olam haba. 5 million years you'll be there. You know where you have a chance to get that, to earn that, he says? Not that you planted that in B'Sochein, in us right now. Listen to this Kiddush. You have the opportunity to be connected to God in a full-fledged passion, ultimately speaking, in the world to come. And that was planted in it B'Sochein. You and I, today, in Israel, wherever we are, the opportunity to earn that possibility. Dafka now. And once again, if that's when you make a bracha, I'm talking sort of a chai olam. You say, well, you kavana. You gave me chai olam. You put in me right now. I can do anything I want right now, but I can do things that will connect me to you forever. That's a tremendous bracha. That's what the world is about. That's what the ultimate goal is supposed to be heading towards. I'll tell you a story that I heard, again, a number of years ago from a student of mine that really impacted me tremendously. My wife was there also, and it was a story we tell every year almost. I haven't told it in a few years, I think, but my wife tells it every year, she tells me. The boy, actually, who I heard the story from, I was at a Shabbat, actually, is my in-laws in Teaneck, New Jersey. A krach, possibly, kfar, according to some. And I was hosting a tish. And there's a boy who was in the yeshiva a number of years earlier from Dallas. And this boy was I asked him to speak at the tish, and he spoke, he told his story. And the story he told was a real life-changing story. At least I felt enough that I should tell it in this life-changing shmooze. So it must be life-changing. So the following story. This is very close to boys. Listen. Story goes, he says, he was after Shanaf. He went to a private, a very, very good private school, but it was not a Jewish private school. He grew up, he had a tutor on the side in Gemara, but he did not go, he was a real genius. He did not go to a Jewish day school. And sure enough, after Shanaf, he excelled. He was very bright coming in, and he really put his efforts to Gemara, and he to the top. He was fantastic. And then between Shana, he went Shana Bet also. And between Shana and Shana Bet, between those two, he was home for the summer in Dallas, and he was working in a day camp for talented, gifted and talented kids. And he was sitting at lunch, and he sees a boy and a girl, you know, about seven years old, sitting and eating near each other. And the boy goes to the girl, he says, you know, would you like a bite of my sandwich? And looks outside, and it was ham in it. And the girl goes to him, no, thank you. He's like, no, it's delicious. She's like, you know, I'm Jewish, I only keep kosher. And the boy's like, I thought she was Jewish. She didn't do anything to show her he was in before, and he was shocked. And then he listens to the conversation, how she would handle herself in the next part, because he says to her, this is delicious. You do not know what you're missing. And she responds back to him, you don't know what you're missing. And he's sitting there, and he's like, she must be really gifted and talented. She's 7 years old and pulled a line like that. What a line. And he was like awed by it. And then he forgot about it. And that weekend, Motzei Shabbos comes. And he gets a phone call, his boy. And the phone call comes from a friend of his back in the days of high school. Private school, not Jewish. He was back from his college break. And he says, we're going to town. If he was going out of town tonight, you're going out to the center of the city. You want to come? The boy did want to come. He really did. But he also knew, Shana Alf, come back, Shana Bet. I had a whole religious experience here. I don't think I can make it tonight. Guy says, come on. All the boys are back in town. We're all getting together again. Let's go. We'll have a good time. Don't worry about it. Whatever you didn't hear, it's fine. We're not going to think too bad. The boy's like about to say yes. And the guy, his friend in line says, come on, he says. You don't know what you're missing. And all of a sudden, the boy, that snaps back into him. He remembered the statement this girl, Hannah, the seven-year-old girl, said. And he turned it down politely. He turned it down. I wonder how many of us believe. I don't know if he said it back to him. I think the story he may have mentioned, but I don't know if he said it back to him or not.
No way.
It would be a little too corny for an old adult to say. A kid could say it. However, here's the question. Is how many of us in this room believe that no one knows what they're missing by not being a Jew, by not being in the yeshiva, by not being davening every day, by not having opportunity to learn? Who believes that chaval for those people who don't do that? Boy, they're really missing out. Who believes that? My guess is a small handful. Most of us would do it out of obligation. Because we know we're supposed to, we educate away, it's hard to break habits, and we don't want to, you know, go against our parents. Tradition. But do you actually believe that you're the luckiest guy in the world? That the people around you who are eating those ham sandwiches who don't keep Shabbos, don't know what Yom Kippur is, they don't know what they're missing? My guess is most of us don't feel that way. Because we don't understand that our ultimate destination is supposed to be the assumption and belief that we're going to get close to God one day. Right now is the job for us to do it right now. I don't think we trust God enough. I don't think we trust Him enough. I'll give you an example. I was talking to first of all, I'll just quote if I can. The end of this, of Parshat Kedoshim, the end of the second Parsha we have, Perek Chav, Pasuk Chav Vav. So Rashi's quoted it. Rashi quotes the pasuk. It says, "Vavdil eschem min ha'amim leosli. I will separate you from the other nations to be mine." Says Rashi in that pasuk, "Im atem muvdalim mehem, hari atem shali." If you will separate from them, if you see yourself differently, then I got you. I got your back. Vim lav, but otherwise, then you'll be with them. Then you're under their rules, under their control. I was talking to him the other day. And the question came up. I'm not going to call him out because I don't want to embarrass him. Because I'm going to say something nasty. Not that nasty. I talked to him the other day, and we were discussing, you know, what happens if you go to the workplace? You're in the workplace, and, you know, there's my mincha's coming. And it's coming close to ending. And you're in the middle of a meeting. And 10 minutes from Shkia, and you're in the middle of a big board meeting. Now, obviously, you're not catching a minion. Push it. Do you excuse yourself for the next 10 minutes? And go daven. So it depends. What's your? We gotta take a right or a left. Well, where am I going to? Do I believe that my staying in the meeting will give me a parnasa that I will not get if I go daven to God? Maybe I do believe that. Or do I believe that God controls parnasa? I'm not asking for freebies. I'm not asking to just drop money on my front porch, but I'm. But I also know that I'm, ultimately speaking, my job in the world is to be close to God. My job also is to work. But the world is for God. And I have a choice right now of davening mincha or not. And missing. I'm not asking for a show of hands what you would do. But to me, it's a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer. How in the world could you possibly suggest that you're going to make more money now by staying in that meeting than by going to daven to God? Do you trust God? He says to you, you separate yourself from the world and I will take care of you. I got your back. You want to be with everyone else? So you live the world like everyone else lives. You want to have an in with the king of the world? Then you make decisions in life that will make you different sometimes. Maybe in your dress, in your kippah. Maybe in your tzitzis. In that when people are eating restaurants, you don't go with them to the restaurant. You're mavdil yourself to God's team. And he promises in return that I will take care of you. Who do you trust? A doctor or God? Well, you go to a doctor, but you trust in God. And when the doctor tells you, I'm sorry, it's not going to work out, the guy's not going to survive, you say, I don't believe you. I'm not trusting you. I'm using you as a shliach for God. I will not stop trying to be better. But if you're the guy who says, I'd rather stay in the office and go to finish the meeting off, then the person's life's over. Because the doctor said so. And that's how we live in this world. You have to choose who you value. The doctor, the CEO, you should respect as well. They do not make the shot. They're not called the shots. God calls the shots. Do you believe it? Chai Olam Natab is so chenu today. You have in your power to get Olam, to get Chai Olam or not. Or you need to be in a business meeting in order to get the Chai Olam. This morning, I woke up to a WhatsApp message from Ethan Gibson. He says to me, Rabbi, he says, can I say slichos for Bahab? You ever even know what Bahab is? Yeah. Well, you know what it is or not, it doesn't really matter. But Bahab is Beis, hey, Beis, Monday, Thursday, Monday. I'm not together right now. He wanted to know, can he say slichos, you know, the minion he davened was too fast, he couldn't say it in the minion. He'll take time out of his lunch break in order to say, go and say slichos right now. He's mavdil himself for God. He's in an army which has real restrictions and rules. And X amount of time per meal. And he's asking me a question, am I still allowed to say in the afternoon, Bahab? Most people don't do such things. But for him, it's a no-brainer. Well, going right means closer to God, slichos. Left means I'm not straying from God, I'm just not getting closer. I'm doing what the rest of us are doing in the army right now. I'm having lunch. At what point in your life do you realize there's a destination I'm supposed to be headed to that has one thing and one thing only? What I'm here in the world to do and nothing else. Just get close to God. And I do so through business and through working, etc., etc. But that's a portion with the major priority being God. You can look at Judaism in one of two ways. It's either a framework for life. Again, I was speaking to someone about this earlier on, which means that you have a frame around you and you live within that framework. As long as it's okay, you're allowed to do it. Like a picture painting with a frame around it. And it could be. And many people in the world live that way. Or, it's something called a tapestry. It means everything's woven together. And in every single fiber of your actions and of your decisions, you have God in there. Every single fiber. You can avoid that if you're a painting. Because just the picture frame. As long as I don't cross over the frame, I'm good. Or, every detail is found also God. Within each and every decision that I'm making is found God. And I end with a story, this is my time, I finished it, so I didn't get a chance to do what I want to do with you. Chaval. But I'll tell you the end what I want to do with you, and hopefully it'll do work next time. This morning I was in the Rebbe van, and Rebbe Olshan says to me, "Did you see your friend who's in Houston?" He was in Houston, I'm sorry, now he's in give a little elbow, thank you. Rabbi Ari Siegel. Did you see your friend Rabbi Ari Siegel's blog he put out? He wrote recently something that he put to the Shall Have a Community where he's a principal. And you saw it?
No, like,
you met him at the tournament. Anyways, sure enough, we grew up together. I read it this morning, and he writes about his experience he had this past Pesach in New York. And he describes how his community feels is lacking a certain passion that he sees in the yeshivish world. He's not suggesting to be yeshivish. He was very clear in saying that a few times. But he was saying, where your passions lie. And he said, a line I want you to think about. He said to the community that follows his blog, I guess, what would your kids say about you one day about what your greatest passions were? What are your kids going to say? You say, will it be in your davening? Will it be in your stucca? Will it be in your learning? many things we were very passionate about, for sure. But where are your kids? The people who are not you. You may feel like, oh, I do all things right reason, but what are people who are from the outside watching you? What are your passions? Is your passion, you know, study? Passion is money? What are they going to say about you one day? And you give them a charge. And I'll give you the same charge also. The reason why we don't connect to learning is because we view the world as a framework. I'm supposed to learn. I'll sit my time, I'm supposed to be doing it. I'm in a framework. The yeshiva has a framework. And I'll sit in my framework. Every word of Torah that you learn is not a framework that you happen to be fitting in. It's a tapestry where the fiber of connecting to God is found in that. You say a word of Torah and you connect to God through that word of Torah. You say davening, you close your eyes and you think about something, you connect to God through davening. I was trying to give a few extra minutes so that you could go downstairs and learn the Meiri with this in mind. It's a tefillah. I'm learning the Meiri as a tefillah. That I want to connect to you in learning. I want to sit in that. By the way, that means when I don't want to learn, it's right now my Yom Kippur. The second is my Yom Kippur right now. I want to do right. I have two choices. I go right, connecting to God, or I can go left, let nature take its course. I'm still in the framework. I didn't violate it. I didn't go outside. I step out of bounds. We live in a world where we're just trying to tiptoe in bounds. And for us, we're not inspired. And we're not even passionate about God. Our decisions that we make right now are not solely involving Him. And frankly, they're not even majorly involving Him. They're minorly involving Him. Because if they majorly involved Him, it would mean we take a lot of us take a different step in our life. Maybe next year won't be the same thing we're going to do all along when we came in here. Maybe different. I'm not willing to do that, we say to ourselves, because I have my path already formed for myself. So I'll live within the framework. And I'm Yotze, and you are Yotze. But you're not passionate. And at 120 years, your kids will say about you, my father was a good man. Took good care of us. Helped the community out. Was a loving person. These are all beautiful things. But I wonder if the word God will come off of your child's lips. If it doesn't, that means you went to the wrong city. You had a destination and you blew it. It's up to us, Kedoshim to you. Our one purpose, our one charge is to be a Kadosh, to connect to God in this world and in the next. If that's not forming and framing every decision that we make, if we don't have a tapestry in our learning and in our davening, and in every mitzvah that we do, we don't think before we do it. I'm doing a mitzvah right now and I'm fortunate, I'm excited. Yes! I'm going to get closer to you now for this mitzvah. I'm learning the word of the Rashba. This is you. This is about you. If you don't feel it, it's because you don't live in a world where you have a tapestry. Nebuch, you're a picture frame of a painting. We should merit to be open-minded. I know it sounds strange when you say such a thing. I know you probably think I'm not. Open-minded to change. Open-minded to assume that up till now I made things in my life decisions where I was trying to tiptoe across a border. And be open-minded to what it would mean for you to have in your life a destination that involved closeness to God as my primary question. Kedoshim to you.